Each weekday, a member of the community is invited to coffee at KYUK to discuss news and information relevant to Bethel and the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. Coffee at KYUK is where our community connects.
Hola, waka, chukma, all across the tundra. I'm also shouting out to the Yukon and the coast. Grady Deaton here, coffee at KYUK. And as usual, I'm sharing the excitement that I'm carrying with you. Next week's going to mark 1 year since the first person in the YK Delta tested positive for the coronavirus. Here we are a year later. The region has one of the highest vaccination rates in the country, and things are looking up. However, after a decrease in cases in early March, outbreaks are beginning again. Here to talk about why these outbreaks are occurring and how to stop them is KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur, who will be talking with Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation Chief of Staff, Dr. Ellen Hodges. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Anna Rose MacArthur. Dr. Hodges, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Anna Rose, for having me.
So, Dr. Hodges, why are cases increasing again in the YK Delta?
That's a really great question and one that we think a lot about here in Incident Command. I think the primary reason is we have always followed both the national and the state trends. And if you look at the national trends, they started going up a couple of weeks ago. The state started going up last week. And so we're also going up. And I think it's just following the kind of national and state trends. As you well know, we're a very interconnected community. And I think we just follow the national trends. So I think it's mainly that.
Okay, and is there anything particular that's happening within the region that's driving up cases that you can tell?
Nothing that I can really put my finger on. There has been, as people have been getting more vaccinated, there has been increased travel, I've noticed. And it's probably related to that. Many of the cases that we've identified in the recent past, at least the start of the case or the index case for an outbreak has been associated with travel. So I suspect it's related to that.
And when we spoke a couple weeks ago, these outbreaks were starting to occur very isolated in just a handful of communities. And at that time, the thinking was that these outbreaks were contained. Is that still the case?
Yeah, that's a great question. And for the most part, yes. We have identified multiple villages with sort of what we call discrete outbreaks. And there tend to be cases that have community-based transmission that are generally associated with an index case that has come into the village generally from travel. So that's kind of how our outbreaks are going right now. In Bethel, for example, we haven't had a confirmed case of community-based transmission in a long time. And we have cases, as people who have been following can see, there are cases in Bethel, but they are travel-related. Because of our high vaccination rates of the general population in Bethel, it's my impression that these cases then aren't allowed to kind of spread around because we have such good vaccination rates and the case investigations and the contact tracing is being able to be done immediately to help contain those cases.
And speaking of the vaccination rate, what percentage currently of the eligible population is now vaccinated in the region?
So this is the percent of the eligible population in the entire region that has received at least one dose is 58.4%.
That's great. And can you say how many people that is?
I sure can. So we have dispensed a total of 20,810 doses of vaccine. And so the total number of individuals with at least one dose is 11,248.
And the YKHC began offering the Johnson & Johnson vaccine in March, and this vaccine only requires one dose, whereas the Pfizer and Moderna that are also being offered in the region require two doses, and people have the option of getting this one-dose vaccine. Since that option's become available, has that helped increase vaccinations in any significant way?
Oh, yes, absolutely. We have many people who have opted for the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, perhaps for the convenience of the one dose. And in 2 weeks, you're considered fully vaccinated, which is really nice because for Pfizer, it takes 2 weeks after your second dose and same for Moderna. So that's a kind of a 5 or 6 week process. So it has increased our vaccination rates, and we're delighted to be able to offer it. It's offered both in Bethel and in villages.
And speaking of another vaccine, Pfizer. So Pfizer released news this week that its COVID vaccine is safe and effective for adolescents ages 12 to 15. And the FDA has not yet authorized the vaccine for this age group. But if FDA authorization occurs, will YKHC be able to begin vaccinating 12 to 15-year-olds?
Absolutely. And thank you for asking, because for everyone who's listening, if you have kids in that age group, we really want you to get online and fill out that form and request that dose, because as soon as that emergency use authorization is released, we are going to start offering vaccine for that age group. I think that's a great way to keep our kids safe, and I know all of us are sort of desperate to get our kids back in school and keep our kids safe and get back to school sports. This is our way to get there, is vaccinating that age group. So if you're listening out there and you have kids in that age group, we want you to go ahead and complete our online form at ykhc.org so that we can start planning our vaccine clinics for when we can vaccinate our adolescents. And we have to have parental permission for that to occur. So we need parental permission, and we need you to complete that form.
And how could ages 12 to 15-year-olds, if that population in the region was able to be vaccinated, how would that affect the course of the pandemic in the region?
That's a really great question. So the more people we can get vaccinated, the closer we can get to this sort of herd immunity, where we have wide-based community protection. So it's going to be impossible for us as a region to get to 80% of the entire population vaccinated, simply because we have so many kids under the age of 18 in our region. So it's very difficult to get there without including these kids. Being able to include that age group, 12 to 15, is really going to get us a huge step in that right direction so that we can get back to our normal life, so we can keep our schools open, so that we can have school sports and activities next fall when school opens again. So I really have a lot of hope that this is really going to get us back, much closer back to normal than, or maybe it's a new normal, but back to normal after this last year of pandemic.
And how could this age group getting vaccinated affect YKHC's recommendations for schools?
So if that age group, so one of the things that's really nice about fully vaccinated people is that they don't have to quarantine if they get exposed to somebody who tests positive. We still are asking them to test for the virus about a week after exposure. But since I'm fully vaccinated, if I were exposed to somebody, well, I need to get tested. I don't have to quarantine. So it's really going to allow schools to continue uninterrupted. Right now, if we have a kid in the school that tests positive, we have to quarantine anyone who's been within 6 feet of that kid. So this will allow us to really keep the schools open and keep everything much safer. And it's very nice. Many of our school teachers out there have chosen to become vaccinated, which also helps keep the schools safe. So I think the more people that we can get vaccinated, the more uninterrupted education we can have.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're asking for parents, for guardians to sign up their 12 to 15-year-olds for the vaccine. And I assume that they'll need a parent or guardian to be with them when the vaccine is issued. They'll need a escort.
Yeah, if we're going to vaccinate them here in our wellness center, yep, we're going to need a parent or guardian. We are working with the school districts to sign permission slips so that if it's available before the end of the school year, we can have vaccine clinics in schools, much like how we do our flu shots in schools. In Bethel, we have that school clinic, so that would be an excellent place to do that. So parents can sign permission and allow them to get vaccinated in that. But we are going to definitely need parental permission.
And speaking of schools, the CDC issued recommendations that schools can reduce physical distancing requirements from 6 feet to 3 feet. Is YKHC going to adopt the CDC recommendation?
That's a really great question. So what we do is make recommendations to our schools, and right now we're going to kind of stick with that 6 feet of recommendation. And schools, many of the schools can choose to go to 3 feet, since that is within the guidance of the CDC. And I don't have a very strong opinion about this one way or the other. The most important thing, in my opinion, is wearing masks and really working hard on that cohort that the school is doing, so that if there does happen to be a kid who tests positive in a cohort, that's the only group of kids that have to be quarantined. So I think that's probably the key here, is really working hard on other mitigation strategies, such as, you know, mask wearing, limiting contact between cohorts, and doing that kind of hybrid learning that they're doing right now, where they aren't having the schools overcrowded. As best they can, keep that distance to 6 feet. And if it has to be less than 3 feet and the school chooses to do that, I think that's perfectly safe. But again, working hard on continuing to have universal mask wearing and then vaccinating as many of the eligible people as possible in a community.
And have there yet been any variants of the COVID-19 virus that's been detected in the YK Delta?
There haven't been any variants. I have not been notified by the state virology lab that there have been any variants of concern in our region, but they are circulating relatively widely in the state, and I anticipate it to be a matter of time before we're notified that we have a variant out here.
And how closely is it being monitored of whether or not the variants are appearing in the Delta? How is that testing being monitored?
That's a good question. So what we do is, if someone has a case that's perhaps a reinfection case or a known travel-related case, especially if they were recently in Anchorage, we're asking that person to get another swab to send directly to the state virology lab for sequencing. The other group we do is from the airport. We are sending a certain percentage of those samples, just all the samples, to the state virology lab for testing, and then if they have any positives, they're doing some sequencing. We're also choosing to sort of sequence a small percentage of our positives that we have, even if we aren't convinced that they're a travel-related case, so that we can have a good surveillance of it, so that as soon as the variants arrive here, we'll be aware.
YKHC is urging people to get vaccinated for this virus, and YKHC has taken this personal approach you've talked about in the past of doing home visits, of being open to getting on the phone with anyone who has questions, walking them through their questions, providing information. And is that working? Is that personalized approach, that one-on-one, it seems like it takes a lot of time, has that been effective?
Yeah, I think it has. We have really tried hard to talk to people about some of the common concerns people have about the vaccine. One of the more common concerns, for example, that we hear when we talk to people is that they're worried it was developed too fast, that they sped through the development of it. And it's just important to think about this in a good way. And I was listening to a presentation that Dr. Zink, our chief medical officer, was giving this week, and she said it's important for people to understand that what was cut wasn't corners. Nobody cut corners in developing this vaccine. What we cut was the red tape, so that scientists and drug companies and the government could all work together at sort of, well, it's called Operation Warp Speed, so at warp speed to develop this vaccine. So it's very safe, and we're now getting up to about a year's worth of safety data for those first people who got the vaccine, and there have been no long-term adverse consequences from getting vaccinated. And we know that the vaccine is very strongly protective against severe COVID hospitalization, death, for example. So it's a really good and safe and highly effective vaccine. So in some cases, people who have those kinds of reservations, if we can talk to them one-on-one, or if they have even other questions, we're happy to talk to anyone. I was just telling our incident command team, I'll talk to anyone anytime for any length of time about vaccination. If people want to call the hotline, 543-6494, we can talk to you about vaccinations and why we think it's safe and highly effective.
Mm-hmm. As I understand it, another reason why the vaccine was developed at the speed that it was also because there was already a great body of research for how to develop a vaccine against a coronavirus. Will you speak to that?
Absolutely. So the SARS outbreak that occurred a number of years ago was another coronavirus, and this was a much more serious coronavirus in terms of the death toll from it and far more contagious. And so they had already laid the groundwork to develop a vaccine against that coronavirus. The other thing is there's at least two decades of research into these messenger RNA vaccines, which is what Pfizer and Moderna are. And so those are a little I think of them a little bit like Legos, building the vaccine, where they just have to plug in the virus that the vaccine is directed towards. And I, in the future, one of the best things to come out of this is the scientific collaboration to perhaps produce more vaccines against other viruses using this mRNA technology. I can imagine a scenario in the future where you might get a combined COVID and flu shot, both on an mRNA platform, which would be really nice. So the research and the platform that was allowed this vaccine to be developed so quickly had been decades in the making.
Next week on Tuesday, April 6th, that will mark 1 year since the first person in the region tested positive for the coronavirus. And it's been a long year. You, Dr. Hodges, have been on the front lines of the healthcare response to this pandemic. And as we're entering this new year, I'm curious, Jess, is there anything that's giving you hope?
Yeah. I think so. I think to me the vaccination has been the greatest hope. It allows us, and it's going to allow us, to get back to our normal lives. So it works best if everyone who's eligible gets vaccinated. And I know there's people out there who are holding back and waiting to kind of see how things go, whether or not they're going to get the vaccine. And I just strongly urge everyone to get vaccinated as soon as possible. The closer we get to 100% of our eligible people being vaccinated, the closer we're going to get back to our normal lives, where we can have visit with our friends and family without fear of catching COVID, and where we can engage in our jobs and in commerce and go to restaurants and travel. But for this to work, we really have to get as many people as possible vaccinated. So as we look back at this last year, all of us are tired of the pandemic and ready to kind of get back to our normal lives. And to me, I just have a great amount of hope. This is an amazing vaccine. We have seen it over and over again in our region where, especially, so for example, in a household where a person tests positive, but most of the household's vaccinated, everyone is safe in that household, and that outbreak doesn't spread. It's limited to the people in that household who are not vaccinated. And so it's just a highly, highly effective and safe vaccine. And that gives me a great deal of hope for the future as we, as our community kind of moves out of this pandemic and moves into the summer, especially with being able to vaccinate the 12 to 15-year-olds. That always sort of broke my heart a little bit that we couldn't vaccinate our kids. But now we will hopefully in the very near future be able to vaccinate our adolescents, and hopefully within the next year vaccinate everyone down to the age of 6 months.
Dr. Hodges, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me, Anna Rose.
Dr. Ellen Hodges is Chief of Staff at the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation. I'm Anna Rose MacArthur. Thank you so much. Grady, back to you.
Thanks, Anna Rose. Good news on the vaccine front. Good news on the basketball front today, too. We have a basketball game this afternoon. I'll be getting those details out to everyone as soon as they're nailed down as far as basketball callers are concerned. And it leaves me just one thing left to say. It is Good Friday, and another chance for everyone to be awesome to each other.